Today is the 10th day of demonstrations in Puerto Rico calling for the resignation of Governor Ricardo Rosselló. Across the island, protests have ranged from the clanging of pots and pans to full-throated expressions of anger in the streets, as well as poetry and music. You can hear some of that via reporter Michael Dybert, who we'll hear from in a minute. But the connecting factors? The protests have all been historic, and they could change the face of Puerto Rico. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to protest in San Juan again today to take part in a national strike. On Sunday, Puerto Rico's largest shopping center, Plaza Las Americas, announced that it would close as a result of the protest. The march is expected to be a turning point in the ongoing political crisis in Puerto Rico, which started in response to a corruption scandal and leaked text messages full of offensive language against women, political opponents, and more. So far, Governor Rosselló has refused to resign. Instead, he said he would not run for re-election in 2020 and has stepped down as the head of the island's pro-statehood party. So far, there's no successor, which some say could leave the island facing a constitutional crisis of its own. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we begin today on The Takeaway. Joining us via Skype to tie together Puerto Rico past and present is Michael Dybert, the Caribbean correspondent for Bloomberg in San Juan. Also with us is Francis Negron Muntaner, a Puerto Rican filmmaker, writer, and professor at Columbia University's Center for the Study of Ethnicity and Race. Thanks to you both for joining us. Michael, let me start with you. Puerto Ricans are gathering once again today, calling for Governor Rosselló to resign. As we mentioned, the governor said he would not step down. Some have said that this announcement was essentially akin to throwing gasoline on an already burning fire. What's your sense so far?
Yeah, I was out in Old San Juan, which has been one of the focuses of protests on the island, because this is where the governor's mansion is, last night after the governor made his announcement. And if anything, it had the opposite effect of mollifying people. And a lot of the response I got from people here was, you know, how stupid does he think we are? And so I don't think this will have any sort of calming effect, and quite the opposite. And I would say concurrently, with kind of people becoming aware of the governor's announcement, he was meeting with a cadre of politicians in Guaynabo, which is this fairly, I would say, well-to-do suburb of San Juan. And when people found out about it, they, you know, surrounded the building and were chanting. He had to basically sneak out the back door, and then the police tear gassed the protesters. And, you know, a large police organization of about 6,000 members has called on Rosselló to resign and warned that the island is on the precipice of what they called fatal misfortune, which is pretty sobering.
Francis, over the weekend, there's been a lot of media coverage so far, but the Washington Post published an editorial that seemed to, if you will, overlook not just colonialism, but really focus on the PROMESA board, which has been quite a point of contention here. What does this tell us about most Americans' understanding of the island and its politics so far?
Well, I think one of the things that it reveals is that people might be overly focused on the individuals or the local political parties or local politics more generally, but the idea that what Puerto Rico needs is a strengthening of oversight or strengthening of U.S. involvement in this manner in Puerto Rico, I think struck a chord, because what people really feel that is needed is that Puerto Ricans themselves take more control of what's going on in Puerto Rico, and that they're empowered to do so structurally.
And Michael, you have been reporting on this over the past couple of days. When you talk to people on the island, what are they saying about the colonial status and of themselves, of the island, and how is that impacting the political views of folks right now?
Well, I think two points are important to raise. I mean, one, when you talk to people here, I think there's a consensus that the days we're living through in Puerto Rico right now are probably the most significant since the 1930s, when an independence movement was brutally crushed and suppressed by U.S.-backed security forces. And the other thing is, you know, when I read that article myself in the Washington Post, that op-ed, I mean, one of the main chants that the crowd has is, Ricky, go away and take the board with you. So, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how one could disconnect the two, because they're very much linked in the mind of the public here, I would say.
I'm speaking with Michael Dybert and Francis Negron Muntaner about the colonial roots of the protests in Puerto Rico. Francis, when we think about what Michael just mentioned was the uprising, I believe it was the Grito de Lares, and that was essentially squashed. There were people who were killed in that uprising. What other ways has the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States changed over the years?
Well, some aspects of it have not changed much. For instance, the legal apparatus that subordinates Puerto Rico to the U.S. through the unincorporated territory doctrine, and the some people call second-class citizenship that Puerto Ricans have that actually does not come accompanied by any substantial rights. Other aspects of the relationship have changed in form. One of them is the forms of economic extraction that Puerto Rico has been subject by U.S. capital, first agricultural, then manufacturing, and most recently through debt or indebtedness. So I think what's happening now that's substantial and perhaps different from earlier periods is the scale of people that are in this protest, the diversity of people that are in the protest, and that many people are crossing party lines. It is not usual or business as usual that people from different party affiliations and different visions of Puerto Rico status come together to challenge the government. So I think in this regard, we might be in a new moment, or a new moment might be in the making. That has, a number of characteristics. One, the scale of people participating is vast, even larger than the ones that participated in another very successful campaign, which was the ousting of the Navy from Vieques. Another thing that I've noticed is being physically here is the diversity of voices that are at the table. So people are not only defining colonialism or as an issue of simply legal subordination or at the level of the federal government. People are also identifying as political, sexual, gender, race inequities. And I think the other very important aspect that's happening right now is the very important involvement of the diaspora at a level that we saw before in Vieques. We saw the involvement of diaspora in Vieques, but the level that it is involved now is at a whole different scale.
And we also, to your point, Francis, there have been protests across the United States, across the world, of Puerto Ricans calling for the resignation of Governor Rosselló. Michael, when we think about Puerto Rico's role in Congress, there is one representative, Jennifer González, who I believe has also called for Rosselló to step down. But González does not have a vote. She has a voice, but she does not have a vote. And that's been the historical relationship with the island in Congress. What has that meant for Puerto Rico's ability to really influence policies that affect the island and its people?
I mean, a couple of points I would raise. One is that because of its relationship with the United States, whereby it is dictated to by a president and a Congress it can't elect, Puerto Rico is a pure colony in a way that very few places are in the world these days. And I think that is at the heart of a lot of its dysfunction. You know, as another thing I would like to add to what the other guest mentioned was that when I talk to a lot of people in these protests, number one, many of them have never been to a political protest before, so they're not inherently kind of activists or political people. And that's a big change, I think. And the other thing is, both the PNP, which is the governing party of Rosselló, and the PPD, which is the opposition party that supports a continuation of the Commonwealth status, are in complete disrepute with the public, I would say. And so rather than just kind of being, you know, a politically minded or motivated series of protests, I mean, what you have is a desire to completely reorder politics in Puerto Rico. And that includes, from the people I'm talking to, its relationship with the United States, which I think a lot of people think has, you know, given some good things, but on balance has been kind of a raw deal for the people here.
It almost feels like a yes, but no in a lot of ways. This sort of, it's called really a free associated state in addition to a commonwealth. Francis, when you look at, you know, post-Maria, there was lots of talk. A lot of the folks that we spoke to on the island said, you know, part of the problem is that the Puerto Rico is not a state, and statehood for some people would really solve some of the issues in terms of how the island was treated. Now we're going into a new presidential cycle. Election cycle. Some of the presidential hopefuls have expressed their support for Puerto Ricans and the protests. But do you see anything substantial so far coming out of those messages?
Well, I think right now most people really don't, are not focused on the issue of status, as they think it's somewhat even a distraction, in the sense that I would say that this whole critique of corruption of the local politicians, I think people are also seeing it as the entire edifice of the U.S.-Puerto Rico relationship is corrupt. Colonialism is a corrupt framework to have a relationship. But I think at the same time, the moment is calling for a, what I would say a reconstitution of what politics should be about in Puerto Rico. And that, I think, goes a bit deeper than the whole entire issue of status, which in some ways you could say it's a legal relationship. I think people are starting to question, what kind of country do we want? How do we get there? And that is a conversation that's really internal to Puerto Ricans right now.
And obviously, this is something, Michael and Francis, you're both aware that this is something that's been playing out on social media quite a bit. We've seen the hashtag Ricky Renuncia. Today, we're looking at Paro Nacional. You know, this brings to mind things about the Arab Spring in 2010, or maybe even Black Lives Matter. Are you, Michael, seeing that that is really leading the charge here, the social media influence so far on these protests?
Yeah, I mean, when I was in front of the governor's mansion last night, one of the protesters said, "This is our Arab Spring." And I have to say, one thing that has been really extraordinary to see is the creativity and the various ways in which people protest. I mean, you walk one block and there's a poetry slam going on. You walk to another block, there's a concert going on. People are taking photos. People are doing performance art in the street. So, and I must also say that up to this point, the protests have been, by and large, incredibly nonviolent, incredibly peaceful, considering how angry people are. So, I mean, it's really a moment when you feel like there's not only a political awakening, but kind of this great cultural flowering of all of this terrific cultural, creativity that the island has. And it's really pretty extraordinary to see.
Francis, we've got less than a minute to go, but I do want to ask, is this a transformative moment for Puerto Rico, culturally at least?
I believe it's a transformative moment at all levels. Puerto Ricans have been enduring more than 100 years of colonialism. Over the last decade, they've endured austerity crisis. They've endured a neglectful response to a hurricane that more than 4,000 people died. And they've also endured the mass migration of the population away from the island. And what I see as the equivalent of the Arab Spring or something similar is that Puerto Ricans are reconstituting themselves as a people. And they're envisioning how do they want to be in the future or what kind of future they envision for themselves. So taking the reins of their own political destiny into their hands.
Francis Negron Montaner is a writer and professor at Columbia University, and Michael Dybert is Caribbean correspondent for Bloomberg based in San Juan. Michael, Francis, thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.